No dejaremos que cierren la linda puerta que siempre ha estado abierta a la vida.
This is Latin Radical with Warwick Fry.
This week we're talking to Lara Pullen, a Latin American solidarity activist, and she'll be giving us a bit of a rundown on El Salvador.
Hi, thanks, Warwick. Well, I guess the big question that solidarity activists around the world are asking at the moment, particularly those of us who've had many years of involvement with El Salvador's political development, is how far will the United States and the resident Salvadoran fascist organisations go to maintain the political control that they continue to exercise in the country, because El Salvador is moving towards another round of elections in early 2009. And we've seen over the last 12 to 18 months a very sharp increase in acts of repression and politically motivated violence and assassinations, returning to the sorts of crimes that we saw committed regularly during the Civil War of the 80s. One of the biggest issues that concern us at the moment is the state sanctioning of that violence and the failure to adhere to, I guess, what we'd call standards in a modern democracy. These crimes are going unpunished, uninvestigated, and perhaps the most recent news that was most surprising is that the candidate that is coming forward from the ruling Arena Party to stand as a presidential candidate is actually the, until very recently, or I'm not sure if he's actually resigned to do this yet, but is the director of the National Civilian Police, the PNC, which was formed out of the process of the peace accords signed in 1992 to end the over a decade-long civil war. This director of the National Civilian Police, Rodrigo Avila, has a list of outstanding crimes that, particularly nasty politically motivated crimes that were supposed to be investigated and which civil organisations are demanding be investigated, and particularly the families of the victims, but which all remain unresolved to date.
These are this politically motivated violence. Are you saying they have some of the hallmarks of the death squads of the 70s and 80s?
Certainly. The particularly nasty crime which carried all the hallmarks of the death squads was the assassination of the family of Mariposa, the parents of Mariposa, the very well-known radio announcer who was the voice of Radio Vincer Ramos during the Civil War and a very important figure also in recent years in maintaining what they call the memory of the country, the memory of people, you know, after such a violent, such a horrific experience as the Civil War. For those who survived it, there's almost been a bit of a cultural amnesia, obviously being promoted by those interests that it represents. You know, it's convenient that people forget. It's convenient that people are told to move on from the old days, to move on from the past. And obviously there's a pragmatism there that makes sense, but there's also a great value culturally in the collective memory and ensuring that it never happens again, looking at why it happened and making sure it can't happen again. And she's carried out some very important work for many years now in that regards. The family, her elderly parents, though, the assassination of her elderly parents did have all the hallmarks of of the old death squad behaviour, which is not surprising given that you know, there was complete impunity for the people who carried out those crimes during the Civil War. And so you find, you know, you have a situation where those people are still integrated into the mainstream political and diplomatic life of the country. So that was probably the worst, or the real acceptance that this was definitely the work of organised death squads having re-emerged into public life and playing that role that they used to play in the past, that terrorism sponsored by the state. And the Attorney General of the country, who I guess is ultimately responsible for all these civil police as well agencies, would be the person most responsible, I guess, to ensure that it happens, because that would be who the director of the National Civilian Police is answerable to. But it's, I think, considered quite an affront by the families and civil organisations that Rodrigo Avila, without having made any progress on not just the murders of Mariposa's parents, but the couple Peñate,
there was a mayor killed recently.
That's right, the assassination in January, 23 days ago, also of Wilber Moisés Funes, who was mayor of the little town of Alegria, representing the major party in opposition, FMLN, who, of course, were the other party to the peace accords in 1992. I think one of the, and also one of his employees, one of the local municipal employees, was assassinated in that awful incident. And these are one of the things people need to understand about how the death squads operate is it's not just a nasty thing that happens to eliminate an individual and then that's sort of the end of it. Mm. They're targeted to create as much terror and panic in the broader population, that the base that's supporting those individuals. They're very, very well thought out and organised assassinations, and you know that goes back to the strategy used during the war of targeting certainly earlier on in the war, of targeting certain people in certain ways to have the maximum impact across the population.
Making a sample of them, so to speak.
That's right. And so picking one of the youngest, brightest mayors for the FMLN opposition party in El Salvador, and somebody who was working very hard for his people at the level of the local population, working very hard to empower very poor and disempowered people, sends a particular message out to other bright young people who are coming up through the system, or democratic young people, whatever you want to call them, but people who are there and willing to serve their communities are now going to think twice about, well, perhaps they're not, because there is a great resolve and courage within the Salvadoran people, as we know, through the way they faced the civil war and the lessons that have been learnt in these 16 years since the signing of the peace accords. There is an incredible courage and resolution to move forward and to claim their rights as a modern democracy. But it does show the difficulties with, the implementation of a so-called peace accord or peace agreement, to have a look at the problems that have been intensifying really since the United Nations disengaged themselves almost completely and removed their presence from the country. We've just seen a constant decline in the political and democratic sort of rights.
And I suppose the fact that there's an election coming on next year, it might, in the lead up to the elections, this kind of activity can be expected to increase.
I think that's definitely right, particularly as you look within the regional context, both within Central America and Latin America, and you see the effects of the leadership of Venezuela and Cuba particularly, but also that ripple effect that's happened, or the demonstration that alternative models that empower people and alternative economic models that remove the structural impediments to implementing democracy and people's power are succeeding in other countries, and obviously in the region, Nicaragua is an example again for Central America. And they say that has been through the inspiration of watching what's been happening regionally and the leadership of Venezuela and Cuba with the ALBA, the Bolivarian Alternative for Latin America, which is a little bit like, I guess, Australians would understand it in the context of or those who are aware of the bartering system of exchange of goods and services without money needing to take part, which gave the tax office such a headache some years ago when it was introduced. Well, you know, you've got this on a regional economic or almost a global economic level, but certainly regional, as Latin America ploughs ahead with exchanging goods and services needed between these countries without any monetary exchange taking place.
Bypassing the World Bank.
That's right, completely bypassing the so-called normal economic structures. So those of us Australians who understood the outrage of the Australian Tax Office when money was removed from the transaction and their attempts to, or their successful, working out how to account for that and charges taxes. You can see how it's happening on a global level. On the global level, though, there's no one that can actually quantify it and then demand the money they would normally have made from it. So you've got the big corporations and multinationals, as well as governments and World Bank, missing out on a whole lot of income that they generated out of one of the poorest populations in the world.
Mm.